Cracking Codes by Diana Kempton. The Knowledge by read by Vienna Vance. Illustrated by Mike Phillips. Introduction. How good are you at keeping secrets? I hope you're brilliant because you're about to learn loads of them. Codes are brilliant at keeping secrets too. And secrets are always fascinating. But wherever there is a secret, there is always someone to trying to find out what it is. So as soon as the code makers dream up a new code, the code breakers set to work trying to crack it. That's why there is a constant battle between the code makers and the code breakers, a battle that's shaped history, won wars, and cost one very important person her head. Code makers. Square. Break this? Code breakers. While that battle was waged on, codes have been used by soldiers, spies, lovers, smugglers, gamblers, and kings. They kept diaries safe from prying eyes, prevented magic spells falling into the wrong hands, and helped generations of children pass secret messages in class. Now you have the chance to enter the secret world of codes yourself. Shh! Don't tell a soul. Put on your dark glasses and a false mustache. Find a quiet corner where no one is watching and read on. In the process, you'll learn how codes work, how to crack them, and how to read minds. With any luck, you'll also put a stop to a criminal mastermind's dastardly plot. But remember, if anyone looks over your shoulder, shut the book quickly and say, shh, it's a secret. Code Cracking Timeline. 1500 BC. An ancient potter uses code to hide his secret recipe for pottery glaze and becomes the first code maker ever, or at least the first one anyone knows about. Aha, you'll never get your hands on my recipe now. I haven't got hands. 6th century BC. An Egyptian graffiti artist writes, I, Victor, the humble poor man, remember me in code on a monastery wall. And we do. Now we've cracked his code. But no one knows why he chose to use one in the first place. Graffiti really makes your arms ache. 5th century BC. The Spartans use a gadget called a scytale to hide their secret messages from prying eyes. Are you prying? Who, me? 8th to 9th centuries AD. The Arabs invent cryptanalysis, the art of cracking codes. And about time, too. The codemakers have had everything their own way for over 2,000 years. I've invented cryptanalysis. Couldn't you invent something with a shorter name? Late 15th century. Arnaldus de Bruxelles uses code to hide his recipe for making a philosopher's stone which is supposed to turn ordinary metals into gold. But he doesn't mention Harry Potter. I'm just not cracking it. 1587. Mary, Queen of Scots, wrongly thinks her code is uncrackable. She finds out the hard way that it's not and pays for her mistake with her life. This isn't all it's cracked up to be. Late 17th century. Antoine Rossignol and his son invent the great cipher of Louis VIII, which is not cracked for another 200 years. This is a cracking cipher, Dad. I hope not. 18th century. Vienna becomes famous for the skill of the code-breaking team working in its black chamber. Have you cracked it? We don't know. We can't see. 1812. Napoleon's invasion of Russia fails thanks to the bitter Russian winter and the work of the Russian codebreakers. 1834. The newly invented telegraph uses Morse code to send messages quickly. The resulting lack of privacy encourages ordinary people to use codes. Hee hee, listen to this. 1876. Telegrams and code are used to try to fix the result of the U.S. presidential election. The telegrams are cracked in 1878 after they are published in newspapers. Phooey, that's cracked it. 1885. The publication of the Beale ciphers triggers a hunt for hidden treasure. West. 1913 to 1918. Sending messages by radio during the First World War makes them easier to intercept, so codes become more important. It also helps the code breakers by giving them huge numbers of coded messages to study. Ooh, lovely. 1917. A decoded telegram leads to the USA entering the First World War. This means war. Bad news, dear? 1928. President Hoover's Secretary of State closes the USA's black chamber because gentlemen should not read each other's mail. Do you mind? Sorry. 1933. Rum runners smuggling illegal alcohol into the USA are caught after their coded messages are cracked. This is a rum do. 1939 to 1935. The cracking of the Enigma code machine helps the Allies win the Second World War. I think I've cracked it. 1938. Marion Woodland and Bernard Silver invent barcodes before the technology exists to use them. I've invented this. Lines? 1957. Russian agent Colonel Abel discovers a big snag with one-time pads. Being found with one helps prove he's a spy. This pad is a giveaway. Spy pad. 1960s and 70s. The growing use of computers increases demand for codes to hide the information they contain. A nice little home computer. 1994. Aldrich Ames, a Russian spy working inside the CIA, is caught after American agents crack the password protection on his computer and decode his files. I think there's a Russian spy amongst us. Never. Today. Everyone uses codes all the time. Computer codes keep your information safe when you shop online, and barcodes help you whiz through the checkout at the supermarket. At the same time, governments, spies, and criminals continue to use them for secret messages. I've forgotten my password. My life's ruined. The secret world of codes. The world of codes is shrouded in secrecy. It's also full of subterfuge, misinformation, and downright lies. But there is a very good reason for this sneaky behavior. Once you've cracked a code, you can read all the other messages that are sent using it. But as soon as your opponents discover what you've done, they will switch to a new code and you will be back to square one. So sensible code breakers have always kept very quiet about their successes in the hope of lulling the code makers to a false sense of security. Secrecy and the Black Chambers. Black chambers weren't very dirty bedrooms or a dark solution to the lack of medieval toilets. They were teams of code breakers used by European governments from the 16th century onwards. Each government allowed all the others to send diplomats to live in their country, but the governments didn't trust each other, so they secretly intercepted all the diplomats' letters and read them before sending them on to their final destination. Hang on a minute, if they were reading their letters, they were probably reading ours, because they guessed what was happening, the diplomats wrote in code. That's when the code-cracking skills of the Black Chambers came in useful. In the 18th century, Vienna's Black Chamber was believed to be the best in Europe. It looked like this. A diplomat wrote a letter, closed it with a blob of wax, and pressed his government seal into the warm wax to make an easily recognizable mark. The sealing wax was supposed to stop anyone reading it secretly. Some hope. Squelch. The letter was intercepted and taken to the Black Chamber, where the sealing wax was carefully melted with a candle. Oops. The letter was copied by hand. There were no photographs or photocopiers in those days. I wish there was a quicker way of doing this. The copy went to the code breakers to be cracked. Which one's the copy? The original letter was resealed with matching sealing wax marked with a copy of the original seal. Not that kind of seal, stupid. The codebreakers were so crucial to the success of the Black Chambers that they were paid extra bonuses if they cracked an important code. As a result, the best codebreakers became rich and important, much to the surprise of the ordinary people who hadn't a clue what they did. The Restoration Review. Shock news from Palace, 1660. Surprise greeted news that John Wallace is working for King Charles II. Wallace worked against Charles' dad, King Charles I, throughout the Civil War. His exact role in the conflict remains shrouded in secrecy, but reliable rumors suggest sneaky Wallace played a significant part in the downfall of Charles I, who ended up losing his head 11 years ago. A roving reporter asked the palace why our new king is happy to employ someone who worked against his poor old dad, and why he pays megabucks to a man who switched sides so easily. A palace spokesman replied, "Go away before I empty this Black Chamber pot over your head." What that reporter didn't know is that John Wallace was the parliamentarian's top codebreaker. Charles II needed his skills so much that he was willing to overlook the past. Leaky chambers. Sometimes the secrecy surrounding the Black Chambers wasn't good enough to prevent leaks. In 1774, a masked man sold a bundle of papers to the French which contained all the messages recently decoded in Vienna. Want to buy some secret messages, guy? The French thought it was a great deal. It saved them hours of work. The Great Cipher. France's real claim to fame in the secret world of codes is the Great Cipher of Louis VIII. It was created during the second half of the 17th century and was so cunningly designed that no one cracked it for more than 200 years. The champion codebreaker who finally unlocked the secrets of the Great Cipher was called Étienne Bezerès. He started work on it in 1890, and after months of work and many false starts, he finally discovered how it worked. Some of its 587 different numbers stood for letters, some for syllables, and one particularly fiendish one told the person decoding the message to ignore the previous number. One of the secret messages he decoded was about a mysterious prisoner who was only allowed out of his cell wearing a mask. No one knew who he was, but there were many rumors about his identity. The secret letter said the prisoner was someone called General Boulogne. That was a real disappointment. It was nowhere near as exciting as the rumors or the book, The Man in the Iron Mask, written by Alexandre Dumas. The mystery was solved, or was it? When it comes to keeping secrets, codebreakers and kings will go to great lengths to hide the truth. What do you think? I reckon he's the secret twin brother of the king, locked away so he can't claim the throne. I think I'll write a book about this. The Zimmerman Telegram. Sometimes codebreakers and governments face a dilemma when their code-cracking successes reveal a really momentous secret. They need to use the information they've discovered, but if they do, they know that they'll give away the fact that they have cracked the code. That's what happened at the beginning of 1917 when the British intercepted a telegram in code. By then, the First World War had been raging for more than 2 years. The opposing armies faced each other in the trenches where thousands of men died in battles, which only moved the front line a few meters forwards or backwards. Many countries had been drawn into the war, but the USA remained uninvolved. As the British codebreakers worked on the telegram, they quickly realized how important it was. Top secret report. Subject, telegram dated January 16, 1917. Sent by Arthur Zimmermann, German Foreign Minister. Sent to German Ambassador, Washington Code 0075. This telegram reveals German plans to encourage Mexico to attack the USA and reconquer Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The good news is that, if we show it to the USA, it will probably bring them into the war and we could do with their help. The bad news is that the Germans will then realize we've cracked code 0075 and changed one we don't know. This would be a disaster. It's taken us months to crack 0075. After some head-scratching, the British had a brainwave. They realized that the Germans had probably sent the same information to their ambassador in Mexico. They also knew that particular ambassador never used code 0075, so they guessed his telegram might have been sent using a different one. To check this, they sent a secret agent to steal a copy of the Mexican telegram. To their delight, they were right. The new telegram was in a much less fiendish code than 0075, and the British didn't mind the Germans knowing they'd cracked that one. It was also slightly different from the one to Washington, so that Germans would be able to recognize which telegram they leaked. The British kept very quiet about the Washington telegram, but secretly gave the Mexican one to the U.S. government. They, in turn, released it to the papers, and everyone was shocked to learn the Germans' plans. Eventually, the news led to America joining the war against Germany, a decision that helped bring the war to an end. Although the Zimmermann telegram changed the course of history, it didn't break the secrecy surrounding the British codebreakers. The Germans thought that only the Mexican version of the telegram had been read, so they never realized code 0075 had been cracked. Which just goes to show that you can never rely on anything in the secret world of codes. Even the jargon can be confusing, so before we go any further, let's look at what some of it means. Codes or ciphers. If you want to crack codes, you need to know that there are two different kinds of secret writing. Codes, which replace whole words with other words or group of letters, and ciphers, which replace individual letters or sounds with symbols, or change the order of the letters. Although codes and ciphers are different, the word code is often used in a general way to mean any kind of secret writing. Confusing, isn't it? This is a good moment to introduce you to Luke Worm, Secret Agent W7. He needs to send you this message. Meet me at the cinema. He doesn't want anyone else to know where you were meeting, so he needs to disguise the information in some way. He could use a code to replace cinema with a different word. Meet me at the zoo. Or he could use a cipher to replace each letter in cinema with the next one in the alphabet. Meet me at the DJOFNB. Of course, neither system is any use unless you know how to work out what it means. Luke has only used his code or cipher to disguise the most important word in the message. The rest of it is not disguised at all. In code jargon, it is unclear. He's not the first person to use this technique. It's been around for over 2,000 years. Ancient magicians sometimes kept their spells and potions secret by replacing the most important facts with code words or disguising them with cipher. My Spiffing Spell by Wizard Swingle the Sweet-Toothed. Crush one dry bat. Blend with half a liter of dragon's blood. Mix in two eyes of lizard. Add one frog. That sounds disgusting, doesn't it? But you may think differently if you know his code. Dried bat equals banana, dragon's blood equals milk, eye equals teaspoon, lizard equals sugar, frog equals cherry. The Secret Agent's Handbook. Send in your reports. All your reports are top secret. Do not send them in clear. First write your report in ordinary language. This is the plain text version. Now use your code or cipher to hide your report. This process is called encoding, enciphering, or encryption. You now have a disguised version of your report, the code text or ciphertext. Send this to headquarters. We will turn your report back into the plain text version. This process is called decoding, deciphering, or decryption. Please note, it is traditional to write the plain text in small or lowercase letters and the ciphertext in capital letters. Codes without writing. All the codes we've met so far have been written down. But writing isn't the only way of communicating, and it's not the only way of using codes. Fires. A large fire on top of a hill makes a good signal because it's visible for miles around, especially at night. In 1588, the Elizabethans knew the Spanish were planning to attack, so they built a series of fires called beacons along the coast of England and Wales and inland to London. The first people to see the ships lit their fire. When the next people along the coast saw the first fire, they lit theirs and so on all the way to London. The code was pretty simple. Fire meant Spanish ships. No fire meant no Spanish ships. It's your fault. I told you damp wood wouldn't burn. Hands. Waving your arms is a natural way of signaling, but they are hard to see from a distance. You can make them more visible by holding a flag in each hand. Soldiers and sailors used to send messages using different flag positions for each letter of the alphabet. The system was called semaphore. Flags. Flags aren't limited to making people's arms more noticeable. They have been used for hundreds of years to send messages from one ship to another. Each country used to have its own system, but since 1855, there's been an internationally agreed code so ships from all over the world can understand each other's signals. This code has a different flag for each letter of the alphabet and individual flags for important messages. For instance, this flag, yellow-red, means either the letter O or man overboard. Sound. Horns, drums, whistles, bugles, and bells can all send coded messages that travel much further than a human voice. Dogs can learn to understand them, too. If you watch a sheepdog trial, you will see shepherds using whistled signals to tell the dogs how to drive the sheep. The shepherd uses a different whistle code for each of his dogs so they can work together without getting in a muddle. Electricity. The invention of the telegraph in the 1830s introduced a brand new way to send messages, electricity. The system wasn't very sophisticated, so there were only two alternatives. Either there was an electric current going down the wire, or there wasn't. You couldn't vary the size of the current, but you could vary the length of time for which it flowed. Samuel Morse, the telegraph's inventor, devised a system of dots and dashes to make it work. The telegraph operator pressed a key to send the current down the line. A short press for a dot or run three times as long for a dash. Did you know Morse code also works well with flashing lights? You can try sending messages to a friend with a torch. The best-known codes. Although fires, flags, and whistles are useful at times, the vast majority of codes and ciphers are written down. In fact, you're using one of the best-known ciphers at this very moment. If you didn't know it, you wouldn't be able to read this book. It's the Roman alphabet. Wait a minute, that's not secret. No, it's not, but the fact that millions of people know it doesn't stop it being a cipher. Here is an important message from Luke. That looks pretty mysterious, but it's not. Luke has just written his message in a different alphabet. It's the Cyrillic one, and that's not secret either. Everyone in Russia knows it. But you probably don't, so you can't understand his message until he shows you the plain text. Captain Cryptic is dangerous. Report. Occupation. Criminal mastermind. Interests. Stealing particularly art treasures. Amassing large fortunes, creating insane plots, cackling maniacally, and keeping tropical fish. It's all Greek to me. Roman Emperor Julius Caesar made good use of a different alphabet while he was trying to keep control of Gaul in around 54 BC. His mate Cicero was surrounded by rebel forces, so Caesar and his army set off to rescue him. They would have marched a long way for nothing if Cicero had surrendered before they arrived, so Caesar sent a letter on ahead telling him they were on their way. But Caesar wasn't stupid. He didn't want the rebels to be able to read the letter if they got hold of it, so he used the Greek alphabet instead of the usual Roman one. Luckily for him, none of the rebels could read Greek. Forgotten secrets. Writing isn't secret. But if everyone forgot what the letters of the alphabet meant, even this book would become completely undecipherable. That may sound far-fetched, but it's not. Something very similar happened in the past. The Great Hieroglyphics Mystery. The ancient Egyptians used a type of writing called hieroglyphics. It was based on small pictures and looked like this. Sometimes they wrote in columns, and sometimes they wrote in rows. The columns were always read from top to bottom, but to make life more confusing, the rows were sometimes read from left to right and sometimes from right to left. You could tell which way to read by seeing which way the animals and birds in that row were facing. Turn around, you'll get everyone confused. For 3,000 years, the Egyptians used hieroglyphics to write messages on statues, jewelry, tombs, and palaces, but gradually they started to use Greek letters instead. The priests were the last to change, but around 480 AD, even they stopped using hieroglyphics. No one learned about them anymore, so before long there was no one left who knew how to read them. Hieroglyphics had become a secret code. Of course, the inscriptions were still there. The tiny pictures looked as if they might be symbols for objects and ideas, and for hundreds of years, everyone believed this was what they were. They thought I might stand for purity, but I don't know why. The Rosetta Stone. Archaeologists and historians puzzled over hieroglyphics for hundreds of years, trying to crack their code. In 1799, they had a breakthrough. Some of the Napoleon soldiers discovered a slab of black rock near a place they called Rosetta. The same message was carved on the Rosetta Stone three times, once in hieroglyphics, once in Greek, and once in another type of Egyptian writing called Demotic. This was just what the codebreakers needed. Knowing what these hieroglyphics meant would make it easier to unlock their long-forgotten secret. Rosetta Stone, Rosetta Jones. A British scientist called Thomas Young heard about the stone and got hold of a copy of the inscriptions. He wasn't convinced that the symbol stood for ideas and objects. He thought at least some of them might stand for sounds. So in 1813, he set out to discover if he was right. First, he found the name of the pharaoh Ptolemaios in the Greek text. This gave him what codebreakers call a crib, a word he could search for in the hieroglyphics because he knew it must be there. Next, he noticed that some of the hieroglyphics were surrounded by an oval, called a cartouche. He guessed this might be what he was looking for, the pharaoh's name. Young tried match to the hieroglyphics inside the oval with the sounds Ptolemaios. It worked out like this. Square equals P, semicircle equals T, flower equals O, lion equals L, equals M, two feathers equals E, cane equals S. Young had proved his idea was right. Some hieroglyphics did represent sounds. He continued to work on the stone for a while, but then he stopped for a bit of rest. Feeling quite pleased with himself, he published the results he'd come up with so far. Although he had made a huge step forward in understanding hieroglyphics, he hadn't completely cracked their code. Finishing the task Young had started needed someone with passion, determination, and skill. That someone was a Frenchman called Jean-Francois Champollion, who had first seen hieroglyphics when he was 10, just a year or two after the discovery of the Rosetta Stone. Hieroglyphic inscriptions are groovy. I'm going to work out how to read them. To help with this task, Champollion studied lots of languages, including Coptic, the closest known language to ancient Egyptian, and he found out everything he could about ancient Egypt. Using that knowledge, he studied the Rosetta Stone himself and agreed with Young's discoveries. But he didn't want to stop there. He wanted to find out everything about hieroglyphics. Luckily, in 1822, a friend sent him another inscription with Greek text and hieroglyphics. The timing was perfect. It was just what Champollion needed. The new inscription contained the names Ptolemaios and Cleopatra, and once again they were easy to spot because they were written inside cartouches. Champollion compared the two names and managed to work out what the symbols for Cleopatra was, but he still hadn't cracked the code. There was one big snag. Ptolemaios and Cleopatra weren't Egyptian names. Maybe hieroglyphics only stood for sounds when people were writing foreign words. The only way Champollion could prove this wasn't true is to find an Egyptian name spelt in the same way. But he couldn't find that on the Rosetta Stone or on the inscription his friend had sent to him. The really big breakthrough happened later the same year. In yet another inscription, he found yet another set of hieroglyphics surrounded by a cartouche. He already knew that the signs at the end meant S, but he didn't know the others. Then he had two brainwaves in swift succession. Brainwave number one. The first sign looks like a sun, and the Coptic word for sun is Ra. Which pharaoh's name begins with Ra and ends with double S? Brainwave number two. Ramesses. Ramesses was one of the most famous of all the pharaohs. Better still, his name was definitely Egyptian. Champollion had proved hieroglyphics stood for sounds in Egyptian words, too. He rushed and told his brother that he had finally cracked the code. Then he fainted. He did that quite often. Odd sort of chap. As soon as he recovered, Champollion went back to his task until, in 1824, he published a book sharing his discoveries with the world. He had finally achieved his ambition. He had cracked the hieroglyphics code and unlocked the secrets of ancient Egypt. Hieroglyphics, Egyptian codes.